We're going to look at, though, at Daniel's background. We're going to look at Daniel's integrity. We talked about David's integrity at length this morning, and tonight we're going to focus on Daniel. Now, Daniel was a young man in Judah when Judah was conquered by Babylon, and he was set off into captivity, where he was then chosen to be a leader in the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonians had a philosophy, basically, that they would, instead of trying to force various countries to fit their mold, what they would do is they would pick young people from that area that they had conquered, train them in the Babylonian way of doing things, and then the idea was to send them back to run the countries in the Babylonian style. Well, because of his abilities, Daniel ended up rising to prominence within Babylon itself. And he served under the conqueror, Nebuchadnezzar. He also served under his son and his grandson. There's not too many bureaucrats or high officials that can say that they have served under three different kings. But the grandson was not a good king. And it was under his rule that the Medo-Persians conquered Babylon. And Daniel had the very unusual distinction of rising to power under the conquered, under the conquerors. He actually served as a ruler, both under the Babylonians, but also under the Medo-Persians. Two totally different kingdoms, empires. Take a look at Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5, and starting with verse 30. It says, that same night, Belshazzar, that's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, the Chaldean king was slain. So Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they should be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. So of all the government officials, Daniel's one of three top appointments in the Medo-Persian Empire to run Babylon. Daniel was so good at governing that Darius actually planned to put him in charge of the entire kingdom. Take a look at verse 3. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Now that's quite a feat. Now, understanding that, we need to back up just for a moment. A lot of times we face difficulties in life. We have times that challenge our faith. They try us by fire. And those challenges actually then show us our true character. In Romans chapter 5, starting with verse 3. Romans 5, starting with verse 3, says, not only this, but we also exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulations bring about perseverance, and perseverance proven character, and proven character hope. And hope does not disappoint because of the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. It is those hard times, those trials, that bring forth evidence of who we really are. But what we oftentimes don't realize and don't think about is that when things are prosperous and when things are going well, that can also be a challenge to the servant of God. There's a very interesting statement that's near the end of Proverbs. It's in Proverbs chapter 30. It's written by a prophet named Agur. In Proverbs 30, starting with verse 7, he says, "Two things I ask of you. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, that I may not be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or that I may not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God." Agur asks for a very interesting thing. He says, "I don't want to be poor, nor do I want to be rich." And the danger that Agur points out is that when a person is rich, they become dependent upon themselves. They seem to forget that God is the one who brought them into that position. If we get prosperous, we have a tendency to lose sight of our need for God. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 32. Deuteronomy 32, and look at verse 15 of that chapter. It says, "But Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You have grown fat, thick, and sleek. Then he forsook God who made him and scorned the rock of his salvation." That is the danger that often comes when we are prosperous. We have everything going our way and we forget our need for God. And we begin to think that everything I have is because of my own abilities. Take a look also in Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 17. "Otherwise you may say in your heart, 'My power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth.'" And says, seeing that this, hey, this is a blessing from God. This is the reason why I have what I have. But one of the things we want to notice about Daniel, yes, he was taken as a child into captivity, but he rose to prominence and power. And yet, all the way through that, Daniel kept his integrity. Daniel remained faithful to God, even in times of prosperity. Take a look at Daniel chapter 6 again. This time we're going to look at verse 4. If you haven't figured it out, you may want to mark Daniel chapter 6, because we're going to keep working our way down through that chapter. It says, "Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him." Imagine this with our current government. How likely do you think it's possible that if some other politicians wanted to bring another one down, they wouldn't be able to find something somewhere to pin on the other one that they despise? In fact, we seem to be going through a phase right now where somebody's trying that. See, Daniel had integrity. Integrity means to be complete, to be upright, to be innocent of willful wrongdoing, is a person with a clear conscience. Job was such a man. Take a look at Job chapter 1 and verse 1. Job chapter 1 and verse 1 says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil." Blameless is very close to the word of integrity. It's the same idea. And even when Satan tried to bring Job down, Job held to his integrity. Take a look at chapter 2. Job chapter 2 and verse 3 says, "The Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil.' And he still holds fast to his integrity, although you incited him against me, incited me against him to ruin him without cause. Despite Satan's attempts to get Job to abandon God, Job held on to his integrity. And Job continued, despite all the trials that Satan gave him, to remain hold fast with his integrity. Continuing on to Job 27. Job chapter 27, look at verse 3. For as long as life is in me, and the breath of God is in my nostrils, my lips certainly will not speak unjustly, nor will my tongue mutter deceit. Far be it from me that I should declare you right. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. I will hold fast my righteousness, and I will not let it go. My heart does not reproach any of my days. Now, Job's not declaring, like we mentioned many times this morning, he's not declaring that he's sinless. He's saying, in this matter, I'm blameless. I have done no wrong. He's being honest with himself, and he says, basically, if I say anything else, I will become dishonest. See, there's two other words closely related to this idea of integrity. One is uprightness, and the other is blameless. None of them are saying that such a person lives a perfect life or never sins. Rather, what we see is an attitude or a character of the person. They choose not to degrade themselves or walk in the path of sin. That psalm that we read this morning in Psalm 26, and we won't take time to reread that again, but if you would look at it again, all the way through that psalm, David declared that he was innocent, that he walked the path of integrity. David knew where he stood before God. He knew the direction he was heading. He kept his innocence. See, David was a man of integrity, both in man's eyes and in God's eyes. Take a look at 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 3. And in verse 6. This is Solomon talking about his father. He says, then Solomon said, you have shown great loving kindness to your servant, David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you, and you have reserved for him this great loving kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is to this at this day. And then over in chapter 9, 1 Kings chapter 9 and in verse 4, it says, but as for you, if you will walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you, and will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, just as I promised your father David, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. David was both declared by his son and by God to be a man who was had integrity, a man who walked upright. That means to go straight. That was something that a lot of David's enemies just did not understand about David. There are people that thought David would reward them for doing things that were corrupt. And David oftentimes did the very thing they weren't expecting because he followed God's law. Now, we know David's sin. And it isn't a lack of sin that defines the upright man, but his attitude towards sin. David and I were driving back to drop him off at where he lives. We were talking about that. He said, well, was Psalms 26 early in David's life or later? And I said, well, that's one of the things I kept running across. Everybody kept wanting to put it early in David's life because they said, there's no way he could be innocent and upright after he did what he did with Bathsheba. But I want you to notice the two quotes I just gave you. They're at the end of David's life. Despite his sins, despite the things that he had done, both his son and God called him a man of integrity. See, it's not the lack of sin that defines an upright man, it's his attitude towards sin. See, too often we put more demands on perfection on ourselves and on our fellow man than that God requires of us. It's not that we tolerate or expect sin, but we should never expect or demand sinlessness. What we should demand is true integrity, true uprightness, true blamelessness from both ourselves and from others. Take a look at Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. And starting with verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. You see what Paul is saying? Blameless, innocent. We emphasize that quite a bit this morning. Above reproach. Again, it doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. It doesn't mean that we don't sin. But our overall character is one who follows God's laws. And see things as they are. In Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1, starting with verse 21. And although you were formerly alienated and hostile in mind, engaged in evil deeds, yet he has now reconciled you in his fleshly body through death, in order to present you before him holy and blameless and beyond reproach, if indeed you continue in the faith, firmly established and steadfast, and not moved away from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which was proclaimed in all creation under heaven, of which I, Paul, was made a minister. And we often talk about, you know, the qualifications of elders and things like that, and one of them is blamelessness. But both of these passages are not talking to elders. Both of these passages are talking to every Christian. Elders are supposed to show that type of attitude and character. But again, it doesn't mean they don't make mistakes. Just like you and I don't make mistakes. But rather, what we see is a person of integrity. And did you notice also in this passage, it talks about holding on, not letting go. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 12, it says, and may the Lord cause you to increase and abound in love for one another and for all people, just as we also do for you, so that he may establish your hearts without blame in holiness before our God and Father at the coming of our Lord Jesus with all his saints. See, this is not some lofty goal that only elders can attain. It's a characteristic that's to be displayed by every Christian. Probably in Isaiah, you find one of the most beautiful descriptions of integrity. In Isaiah 33, Isaiah 33, and starting with verse 15. He who walks righteously and speaks with sincerity, he who rejects unjust gain and shakes his hand so that they hold no bribe, he who stops his ears from hearing about bloodshed and shuts his eyes when looking upon evil, he will dwell on the heights, his refuge will be the impregnable rock, his bread will be given to him, his water will be sure. Your eyes will see the king in his beauty, and they will behold a far distant land. This is what integrity is. Having nothing to do with evil. We talked about that again this morning. Where David said that, you know, he stays away from the wicked. Here it talks about shutting your eyes. Think about it, like, you know, get on the computer and things like that. Do you actively turn the thing off? I go through it every once in a while when I go through my Facebook feed. I'm constantly hitting the button that says, hide this. I don't want to see it. There's stuff that I did like three times today. There's just stuff I don't want to see. I don't care. I could keep scrolling, but I just don't want to see it. Stop sending me this stuff. You do that with the TV. Everybody forgets there's an off button. Now, when there's stuff that doesn't belong there, turn it off. Fast forward or something. You don't need to see it. You don't need to hear it. You don't need somebody bringing you down to their level. But if you notice with Daniel, see, we haven't forgotten Daniel. Notice that with Daniel, the wicked don't like people with integrity. It just goes hand in hand. And those who have integrity become then a target for their schemes. Take a look at Psalms chapter 11. Psalms chapter 11 and verse 2. For behold, the wicked bend the bow. They make ready their arrow upon the string to shoot in darkness at the upright in heart. They want to bring the righteous down. Down in Psalm 37. Psalm 37 and verse 14. The wicked have drawn the sword and bent their bow to cast down the afflicted and the needy, to slay those who are upright in conduct. And again in chapter 64, Psalm 64 and verse 4, to shoot from concealment at the blameless. Suddenly they shoot at him and do not fear. Notice also they're not so bold enough to do directly. They hide the shoot. The wicked just don't get along with the upright. They don't get along with those with integrity. In Proverbs chapter 29, Proverbs 29 and in verse 27, an unjust man is abominable to the righteous, and he who is upright in the way is abominable to the wicked. The two camps just don't get along with each other. And there is hatred between them. Going back to verse 10 of that same chapter, Proverbs 29, verse 10, men of bloodshed hate the blameless, but the upright are concerned for his life. So why is it? For most part, those who are living righteous want to live their life. So why do the wicked hate them so much that they search them out and try to bring them down? Well, part of the problem is they don't like the very concept of sin. See, if they admit there is such a thing as sin, then they have to apply it to themselves. Rather, they want to say there is no such thing as sin. And so anyone who avoids sin gets mocked. Take a look at Proverbs 14. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 9. Fools mock at sin, but among the upright there is goodwill. I don't have this on my list, but take a look at in Peter. 1 Peter chapter 4. When Peter tells Christians that they need to give up sin, starting with verse 3, it says, "For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, there's surprise that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you." This is the way the wicked treat the righteous. If someone says no to what they want to do, that is taken as a personal offense. Oh, now you're saying you're better than I am. And they don't like to be told they're wrong, even indirectly. Go back to the Old Testament, to Amos. Amos chapter 5, and in verse 10, "They hate him who reproves in the gate. They abhor him who speaks with integrity." When people say things as they are and tells the truth and they're not corruptible and they say right is right and wrong is wrong, you got to understand there are people that really can't stand that. In other words, they can't stand that there's someone who's successful at living better than themselves. And that's the problem Daniel faced. See, Daniel wasn't doing anything wrong. He wasn't making these other satraps and governors' lives miserable. He was doing his job. And he was doing it so well that the others decided they had to bring him down. So having found no fault, they turned to another scheme. They can't find anything wrong with him, so they decided to define a right as being wrong. Take a look at Daniel 6, starting with verse 5. "Then these men said, 'We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God.' Then these commissioners and satraps came to it by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows: 'King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps and the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce it, an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked.' Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction." Now, they didn't tell Darius their intentions. They basically presented it in such a way that it was flattering to Darius. And probably Darius never even stopped to think about the implications of the document he was signing. But notice what they were doing. They found something that was good, and they managed to pass a law to declare it was evil. There's a passage in Isaiah that tells us about that. In Isaiah chapter 5, and in verse 20, Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. God doesn't like it when people redefine morality. In fact, he calls it an abomination in Proverbs chapter 17. Proverbs 17 and verse 15. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the righteous, both of them alike are an abomination to the Lord. Now, today's society calls that political correctness. Something that was once right is declared to be wrong for political reasons, not moral reasons. And to say anything different, oh, Sonny, now you're the bad guy. Don't understand that. Just go out and tell somebody that homosexuality is wrong. See, they redefine a wrong into a right by just definition, not by moral stance. And yet, Daniel still maintained his integrity. Take a look at Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10. Now then Daniel knew that the document was signed. He entered his house. Now his roof chamber, he had windows open towards Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he has been doing previously. Daniel refused to change. He held on to his integrity. See, integrity is not defined by other people. It's the choice of following God's ways. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 29. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the upright, but ruin to the workers of iniquity. See, integrity guides a person into being able to make correct decisions. In Proverbs 11, take a look at verse 3. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the crookedness of the treacherous will destroy them. Daniel understood this. The reason where Daniel is at is because of his integrity, because he held on to God, because he followed God no matter what. He's not going to change that just because somebody passed some law. Integrity is a highway that's clearly marked. Take a look at Proverbs 15 in verse 19. The way of the lazy is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway, smooth, level, quick to go. It's in a highway that leads away from evil. We talked about this just recently in Proverbs 16, verse 17. The highway of the upright is to depart from evil. And he who watches his way preserves his life. Again, there's this idea, you stay as far away from evil as you possibly can. You don't need it in your life. There was no question as to how Daniel would respond. I don't think Daniel had to stop and think, should I really keep doing this or not? Daniel already had made up his mind. He's following God, period. He didn't compromise his principles simply because other people were declaring his principles to be wrong. And of course, Daniel was then reported. And the punishment was handed down. But the king's response is really fascinating. Take a look at Daniel 6 and verse 14. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. Even until the sun set, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then when these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, now recognize, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which a king establishes may be changed. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. Isn't that fascinating? What an impact Daniel had made on this king. Daniel's integrity made an impression. This king knew that Daniel constantly served God. And even the king had faith that Daniel's God would rescue him. See, that's the nature of walking in integrity. It influences the people around you. Take a look at Proverbs 20. Proverbs 20 and in verse 7. A righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. It continues on generation after generation. But you have to have that integrity. That's why it's so important. Take a look at Titus chapter 2. As Paul was talking to Titus about preaching, in Titus 2 and verse 7, he says, "In all things show yourself to be an example of good deeds, with purity in doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, so that the opponent will be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us." What gives you confidence to be able to stand up before people and say, this is right, this is wrong? Because unlike the politicians, everybody's looking for skeletons in the closet. Just have no skeletons. Walk with integrity all your life. And Daniel was saved because of his integrity. Again, let's go back to Daniel chapter 6, this time starting in verse 17. A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring, and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. And no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Then the king arose at dawn, at the break of day, and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near to the den, to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, to whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel spoke to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I have been found innocent before him. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime." Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken out of the lion's den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. See, integrity is a source of security. Back in Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10. And in verse 9. "He who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his way will be found out." It preserves a person. Over in Psalms this time, Psalms 25, and in verse 21. Psalms 25 and verse 21. Said, "Let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait for you." Now, that didn't help with Daniel's enemies. It says the path of the crooked, the deceitful, which they were, That's a destruction for them. And it shows in Daniel's case. If you look at Daniel chapter 6, verse 24, it says, the king then gave orders, and they brought the men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them and their children and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed them, all their bones. Now that's such is the nature of our God. Continuing on in verse 25, it says, then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who are living in all the land, may your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. He had a long life. Five kings that he served under. Two different empires. And the security that he had was in his integrity. So which path do we choose? Take a look at 2 Peter. One last verse. 2 Peter chapter 3. And starting with verse 13. It says, but according to his promise, we are looking for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Therefore, beloved, since you are looking forward to these things, be diligent to be found by him in peace, spotless, and blameless. I hope you consider these things and think about them. If there's anyone here tonight who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God, we'd like the prayers of your brethren on behalf. Again, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing the song Selected.